All right, let's go to the phone lines. We've got Mark Stansberry on the line with us here. He's energy expert, but of course he also has a consulting firm. Is that the right term? Be a consulting firm, I suppose?
Jason, it's energy advisor and corporate development strategist is the terms I use. Gives a broad brush of what I do, and really focusing on strategy for corporations.
Well, I used to call you an energy expert because it kind of encapsulates everything together, because it does take quite a bit to be an energy expert. You know, I often bring in Curtis Shuck with the Well Done Foundation, who's out there capping abandoned wells. Well, he worked in commodities and supply chain and an actual import-export port. And when you work in all these different areas that you know as well as I do, the oil and gas industry, they got so many different streams, upstream, downstream, midstream, salmon stream, trout stream, you name it, man. They got streams you've never heard of.
You're right.
So you got to, it takes a lot, you know, to become, you just got to walk the walk and be able to have some talk of the talk behind it as well. But thank you for coming on the program, because right now is when a lot of these companies are getting together for their annual meetings, you know, over October, November, December. And whether it's an energy company or a corporate America, the trend for a lot of these companies is over the course of 1 month, maybe 2 months, they make the primary amount of their decisions during that time, and then they kind of manage those decisions over the next 10, 11 months. So you may disagree with me on that, kind of that blanket statement. I understand each one is unique, but that's been my observation. And so we thought we'd bring you in to help some of those companies navigate over the next 10, 11 months, because a corporate strategist, that's what they do. So thank you for joining us today and not charging me. I appreciate that.
Or vice versa, you charging me, so I appreciate that as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit of turkey here. You know, if I'm going into the boardroom, and if I'm going into a shareholder meeting or whatever the case is, what do you think is number one, and what do you think should be number one?
Well, first of all, do you have the right team? I mean, each year, you know, you evaluate and go in there with the attitude of, do I really have the right people? Do I have the right tools? Do I have the proper funding? And go down the list. But I think if you have the right team, the right CEO and C-suite in place, and then also the managers, and it goes beyond that. When I say team, it goes from department to department, and how are the departments working together? Is there good communication and those kind of things? And really, I was giving a talk, Jason, back in 2018, went on the circuit and was talking. My theme was based upon the digital transformation from the whiteboard to the boardroom. And I found that, you know, if you're in a boardroom and you're just, that's where you show up, and you really don't know what's beyond that, meaning you haven't looked out and gone out in the field, or you've not talked to some employees in the C-suite and so forth, only at the meetings, you really don't get the full picture just in paper. You know, you get all these reports and all that. It goes beyond the reports. You can tell by going, walking the hall or talking out in the field. And I think it's so important to take that time to do that. It's beyond the pay in a sense, but that's important to go the extra mile when you're a board member and the C-suite as well, to really get to know the mission you have in place. You have a mission printed, but really, are you meeting that? Are you meeting the vision that's ahead? So I think it takes really a coordination of going beyond what you normally would. But I emphasize the C-suite talking with the board and very, not just in the details of a board meeting, but get to know each other as much as you can, and then go out into the field, go out to the employees, get to know each other, converse, communication is essential. The tools are very important. When I say the whiteboard to the boardroom, the whiteboard, meaning those that have the research and technology and all those tools available to them, are they really being listened to by the board? I know that one thing that I was on one board, and cybersecurity was an issue several years ago, but it wasn't really being taken on. It's there, it's an issue. And so it would be brought up in particular by a person from the whiteboard to talk about we really need to implement something. We need something in the board minutes to you know, say that we're working forward on this and really have a plan on cybersecurity. I've seen that really step up, as you know, Jason. And then another issue that stepped up is environmental social governance, ESG. I call it the ESG factor. And the ESG factor is so essential right now, because when you take shareholders, especially if you're a public company, and you're trying to get investors and shareholders to look at your direction, it's very important to be on top of ESG. And I find that a lot of the major independents are definitely stepping forward that way, trying to explain their position through certification or definitely reports, websites that are just aimed at that direction to talk about ESG. So environmental, social governance. Then it goes into the tools of what you're going to need in the future. I know one company in particular that I have close relationships with changed one of the departments to robotics. And so one of their buildings, and it really didn't lay off anyone. It wound up they were able to use the robotics in a safety way. It helped people as far as their backs and so forth, because there was some lifting involved with the particular department, and they started to use more of robotics, and so we're seeing, you know, artificial intelligence step forward, robotics. We're seeing other things that we didn't think about. You know, I go back, you talk about expert. I mean, the only way I could be an expert in any given time is I also have good advisors around me as well to go to, because you need that team. I need the team as well. But I remember, Jason, pre-fax machine, you know, we did a lot of deals in the past. We didn't have the fax machine, and we didn't have definitely the iPhone and emails and all that to work from. Think of where we've come, Jason, through the years. I say me in particular, in my age group, and we're still learning. But the board can get really settled sometimes and just take, you know, we're going to do the meeting just like we normally do. We're going to go through these quarter reports, annual reports, all this, and really not pay attention to what the future holds, and really get that the crystal ball out and go, what is it really going to look like 5, 10, 20 years from now? How can I help my company become better? So that's the board's challenge.
A couple things on what you just said. Number one, first of all, between you and me and anybody who's listening, you know, being an expert is really just knowing 1% more than the guy sitting next to you. So
it's, I appreciate you saying that.
Let's just keep that in mind here,
that's
folks.
True. That's very true.
Secondly, I wrote down shareholder communication, and I think it was it Exxon that kind of had that shareholder shakeup where
right.
some climate
sure
idealists came in and
three
took over.
Chairs, yeah.
Yeah, so there's obviously, I understand there's been investor relation departments in the past, but I almost am going to prophesize right now that there's going to be kind of a new little niche market emerging, if not already, just with corporate shareholder communications, because it's serious now. If we're talking about climate idealists coming in and taking over shareholders, I don't know if this is the ESG talk. You know, I'm sure one thing has to do with another, but talk to me a little bit about the communication going forward, or your observations, your thoughts with shareholders.
Well, I'm seeing, and I say this, I'm seeing firsthand getting calls, different ones, talking about where do I go when I want to invest in energy, and you know I point them different directions of, you know, not just, you know, talking about stockbrokers, I'm talking about, you know, as far as sectors to go and so forth. What should I do? And I find that really they are looking for advisors that guide them on how they can be striving. I use a theme. It's my theme that started back in 92. I keep this. It's called Striving for Energy Efficiency and Environmental Preservation. Well, that sounds really great, but how do you find that balance? And that's really what most of these investors are looking for, is how can I have a great energy company, whether that's in oil and gas or other energy sectors, or forms of energy, but also keep the environmental balance, because that's in demand. I mean, whether it's ESG or not, that is the demand. They're looking, a majority of folks are looking at opportunities to have a strong company that really addresses that. And so I will go through it, you know, saying, well, oil and gas companies are very essential. You've got the pipelines that are very essential. We've got to maintain what we have. It's not to say we don't have innovation and technology move forward, but we're going to need investments in all these. And you got to maintain what you have, first of all, in order to get to the second, third, you know, scenarios that we want to talk about down the road, whether it's electric vehicles or hydrogen and so forth. Today, what's the issue? Today, we need our pipelines. Today, we need the oil and gas companies to be vibrant. And we don't need to be leaning on foreign oil. We need to be leaning on our own oil and gas. And so that becomes the topic. And then they go, how can we strive for energy efficiency and environmental preservation with oil and gas companies? I'd say they're already doing that. You know, Exxon's invested close to $1 billion on carbon sequestration. There's other companies that are talking about methane emissions and curtailing those. So the oil and gas companies take the lead. And in a big way. And I think that's what's missed a lot. And once that's discussed, it basically settles those individuals down and go, well, we definitely need to be looking at oil and gas, don't we? And I said, yes, we do. Oil and gas is definitely a very important part of our daily intake, but it will be for years ahead. It's not going away. And we'll see other innovations, other technologies. But we definitely need our strong oil and gas industry to move forward, Jason.
Well, I kind of want to go into the toy department for a little bit, you know, speculation, yes, to speculation area, because I call that the toy department. You know, you go have fun, because really, that's all you're doing is you're playing crystal ball and sports center, right, and, you know, sports shouting and everything. You're just trying to playtime, really. It's serious stuff, but at the end of the day, it's barroom chatter, you know what I mean? So this ESG stuff is right up. It is red meat for the barroom chatter, because there's a legitimate need for the conversation, but at the end of the day, it's all speculation at this point. I just got done speaking on ESG University, ESGU. We did a symposium at the Gillette Energy Expo.
Oh, wonderful.
And yeah, and it was the governor's sent someone to watch. And he came up and talked to me afterwards about a number of the different things that we discussed, because we kind of went a little hard at some areas, meaning there were a lot of people didn't realize how far along this was. And what I mean by that is I showed a couple slides. First of all, I kind of threw out there, hey, how many people have heard of a ESG score? And only two people in the audience. One was the governor's guy, and the other one was a shareholder of Exxon. And I went, okay, and the rest of the people hadn't even heard of it. So I showed three oil and gas companies' ESG scores that were available on a website. And it was Yahoo Finance is where I got them from, Yahoo Finance. And I said, I go, you know, imagine the gall of what's going on here. I go, we haven't even decided if this is even a topic or not, ESG, but I go, this is one of 67 websites I found that have an ESG score. And by the way, they're all the same. So apparently one person came up with the idea and 66 people copied them. I go, investors are looking at this. I go, whether it's influencing them or not, I don't know. But when the word severe is listed on there, and I pointed that out during the ESGU, I said, they're using words like severe, not needs improvement, not puppies, not kittens, not sunshine. No, they're serious. So they're defining. So what I was telling people is you need to get on the narrative train right now and try to set the narrative of this ESG, because they're already putting money aside for things. I mean, this is an industry now. So anyway, your turn. Go. Just
No. I totally agree with you. I keep going because what you're saying is exactly true. Are we prepared? And that's really what I go back to the whiteboard to the boardroom. I don't know. I think there's the disconnect on many boards. They don't see what's moving forward. They read about it, they hear about it, so forth. But are they prepared? And that's the annual meeting or the annual planning. And it goes into board meetings and so forth, not only preparing budgets, but that would be part of it, actually. But to look at the full picture from the C-suite to the tools to what issues are ahead, from cybersecurity to ESG. I mean, the list, I call it the watch list. I've got a huge list. You probably do too, Jason, that you watch on a daily, weekly, quarterly basis, that it's amazing what's changed over a period of time in our industry. And I'm speaking of oil and gas as well as the energy industry across the board. They're moving all the time. Regulation and things like that, that we don't know what's going to be, you know, 6 months from now, or even, maybe even 6 days from now, the way things are working. So we have to be adapting. Is, you know, are the board or is the board ready to make that challenge or meet that challenge? And if not, we need to look at the board also. Does it need to be changed up? You're talking about shareholders taking a lead in making sure they're on the board. That can be good, but also can be bad if they're not really what we talked about earlier, the experts that you need in on the board. Are they just agenda driven? Do they really know the issues? Or is it just, or do we really look at a board that is comprised of individuals really need across the spectrum of energy and business? And also it can represent the shareholders in a proper way. So there's a lot, you know, it's not the typical board anymore. And I say typical meaning, you just don't show up to the meeting and approve what the C-suite comes up with. It's if you're going to be successful, you've got to be in the mix of planning and working side by side to a certain degree with the C-suite to be successful. It's very important. I know on one board I was involved with, I actually thought cybersecurity was such an issue that I invited an expert from the government on cybersecurity to come to our board meeting to discuss it. And many of the board members were reluctant about that, saying, well, we don't need that, it's down the road. But by the time the individual spoke at our board meeting a few years ago, it awakened them to the fact that we better invest some time on cybersecurity. I think that's the same way you're talking about on ESG. I think it's the same thing we're talking about in investor relations. We need to have more communication like you're doing, Jason, going out and talking about it. Energy education has got to be at the forefront with the facts like you're presenting. And that needs to be from the top of the C-suite all the way to the those in the field. We need to be all on board.
Well, and that was one of the things we showed was the benefits and some of the issues. Like we all sides that we could, because it's healthy to have the discussion now as opposed to later, because I'm all about being proactive instead of reactive. Right. And right now I'm just trying to emphasize more than anything that, well, and I brought up this example too. I said, folks, you don't realize what you're up against. And they kind of looked at me. I said, listen, I'm not trying to, you know, be a boogeyman here. I'm not trying to be overdramatic, or I'm not trying to be a doomsday predictor. What I'm trying to tell you is that the marketing is so good on the other side. And I hate to use the word side, but it is. It's a special interest that's driving a lot of this to the tune to where if you are the top climatologist in the world and you get invited to go speak at the G20 summit or whatever that climate summit is in Paris every year, the big one where they all come together and it's they framed it to set the global standard in terms of whatever our emissions control and climate control is going to be. Well, if you're the top climatologist in the world and you went to school for 100 years and you got more degrees than you got shelf space, and you go and you become the keynote speaker only to get usurped by a 16-year-old girl who doesn't even have a high school education as a new authority figure for climate change, it's a different world, folks. And the governor's person just started laughing. I mean, just
exactly.
Like, oh, wow, did that? I was like George Carlin up on stage. It was so truthful. It was funny, you know. But that's the reality of it out there is they're really using emotion over facts. And that's the one thing I was trying to get hammered home to the energy industry is that's what you're up against. And whether you like it or not, you got to at least understand that. So your turn.
No, Jason, I agree with you totally. And it's emotion is, and I reflect on that on social media. when you get these little sound bites, I call them sound bites, and same way with YouTube, you listen to something that talks about climate or energy or whatever for 30 seconds or less, and that's all the facts that are that person listens to that day, maybe about energy. You know, we're facing these little sound bites, and are we getting the message out? I find that we're not. We're not in so many different ways. I find that that we're getting, you know, you're doing your part by all means, Jason, and I feel like I'm doing my part to a certain degree, but it's going to take a lot of us from the whiteboard to the boardroom to make sure it's no longer just a few people from the executive suite talking. It's got to be, you know, shareholders, investors, investment bankers, everyone on board to know what we're talking about, because the facts are not getting out there a lot of times. We're having to use these little sound bites that are not necessarily correct, and we have to correct those and try to keep up with that, even without even giving time sometimes to really say, here are the facts. You know, we're just trying to keep up, and we're not keeping up. And so I like what you said a minute ago. We've been an industry of reaction for quite some time, versus being proactive, and that's cost us. And we've got to be more proactive, tell the facts. People are wanting the facts. They're wanting to hear the facts. And I know that from going out to universities, speaking in undergraduate or graduate programs. And when I first walk in, there's the oil and gas guy. You can feel it in the room, the tensions in the room. And by the time I get through, they see that I really, you know, it's sincere in the idea that we need, again, energy efficiency, environmental preservation. We have a strong oil and gas industry we need to support, those kind of things. And by the time I get through normally, it's well received in that I'm trying to say, go to the facts, you know, and they really, you know, I would say the younger generation in a lot of ways are, you know, not getting appreciated in that, in the sense that they do like the facts. The problem is we're not really presenting them correctly in the right format a lot of times. And that's, I know I gave a talk at Georgetown University a few years back, and I asked him what are the top forms of energy that come to mind. And at the time, one student raised his hand. This is actually an honors program. It wasn't just a, you know, it was definitely an honors program. And this one young man raised his hand and said, the coal industry. And he said, clean coal technology. And I was really taken back, you know, and I was going, well, where did you hear this? What tells you that? What guides you on that? And he said, well, I listen to YouTube. I watch YouTube, and they're doing, you know. So I looked it up, and at that time, several years ago, the probably one of the best advocates on YouTube for energy was the coal industry, clean coal technology. And if you looked up at that time, I didn't really see much on natural gas or oil, and really not any other forms of energy like clean coal. So here you had, you know, it's the impression, the being proactive and getting the facts out, that we've kind of not been as active as we need to be. And I thank you again. I emphasize, Jason, that you'd be listened to across the board, because we need more Jasons out there.
Well, I appreciate that very much. You know, we try to listen to the people out there. Actually, all we're doing, we're kind of a reaction of the people. To be honest, it's just, you know, trying to find those ones who are kind of the soothsayers and the early responders. And, you know, that's a skill in itself. You know that, being able to try to navigate some of the waters and et cetera. And so, you know, it's experts like you and some of the observations that you're seeing out there, boots on the ground, that really are allowing the crude life to become what it is. I joke because, you know, the day after Joe Biden got elected, we were saying it's the next Jimmy Carter presidency. We actually, the very next day, we compared it there. And then we laughed because in May, Harold Hamm was going around all the news stations saying it was a Jimmy Carter presidency. So we joked that even Harold Hamm listens to our program, gets ideas.
I love that, yeah. You're way ahead of him.
Well, right. Well, and there's some things that are about as subtle as a slap in the face. You know what I mean? And that was one of them right there, was definitely that. I did want to ask you about your governor's international team that you're on. You're part of the Oklahoma Governors International team, aren't you?
Yes.
What's that all about?
Yeah, I got on in the early days when it started back 20-some years ago. And, again, telling my age, but I was chair back in 2007. And now I'm, again, telling my age, I'm honorary emeritus, somewhat title, whatever lifetime title they have, having served. It's where I'm not required to go to the board meetings, but I'm definitely included to be part of the board if I want to show up. And so that's nice. But at the same time, the Governor's National Team is a great group of folks, about 30 or so, from across the state of Oklahoma, from education to business to finance to energy, higher education, on and on. And so it's well represented by the different sectors, industry and so forth, manufacturing, and I can go on and on, Department of Commerce and U.S. Department of Commerce. And they have, the Governor's National Team has a monthly meeting, and we meet to discuss issues from all these different sectors I talked about and others, to keep each other informed and then to inform the governor and his team, his staff, of what's going on as far as the international community, as far as global perspective, from our perspective for global economy and so forth from Oklahoma. And been involved with that, like I say, for quite some time. It's very helpful to communicate. We have a upcoming, I'll be moderating in late October. There'll be an Oklahoma trade conference, World Trade Conference, Governor's International Team puts together. I'll be moderating. There's five different areas to be discussed. I'll be moderating the speaking on energy, and we'll have consul generals that will be virtual. It'll be virtually held, and as well as those that want to attend in person. But a lot of it will, of course, be folks that will not be coming in from consul generals and so forth. But so I'm looking forward to that, because we are able to communicate with countries that we want to export to and develop relationships with. And we do have expertise that we like to share in all aviation, energy, manufacturing, things like that. So I really enjoy being able to be on the Governor's National Team to you know, exercise, by giving information about what we're doing, sharing those different ideas, to communicating with leaders both in the Oklahoma legislature, Governor's International Team across the board, and to the governor, but across the nation internationally, because we're communicating with those outside. So it's a great platform, and so I really appreciate those that serve on it, and look forward to this trade conference that's coming up late October.
So professionally, are you looking for new clients, new business? Are you working at all? Talk to me about how some people, you know, the businesses can give you some support out there.
Thank you, Jason. Yes, if you go to www.markstansbury.com, it talks about serving as an energy advisor and corporate development strategist. On that side, it also gives a bio, but also a podcast that I have called International Energy Talk. It provides a column that I write that goes out and to several, in fact, ones that we share is Old Man Magazine, and that we're both contributors to. GTR Newspapers, a group of newspapers, it's about six newspapers across Oklahoma, south, and especially in northeastern Oklahoma, Exploring Energy News, on and on. And so I'm looking forward to the opportunity to discuss and work with those that are, even what we talked about earlier, Jason, those that are looking at down the road and not, you know, where are we today as far as advisory and where do we want to go and how are we going to get there and how are we embracing, or what do we need to embrace and how should we embrace different issues. And you already talked about, or we talked about cybersecurity, we talked about ESG, but it goes on and on. How can we properly tool our and I embrace the idea of our employees, because when I do advise and the strategists, I look at it as ours, in the sense that it, we need to carry this, you know, the companies forward, these people, employees, and the investors and the shareholders, we need to work and share together. And so I try to give advice from the gray hairs of the years, as well as strategize as how can we develop a plan, a strategic plan that is, and keep working on that. You know, it's just not something you just create. It's something you look at quarterly, weekly, quarterly, and yearly, and continue to develop this plan that hopefully gets folks to a greater value for their industry and for their particular company.